The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Official Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. A year ago, this government gave out $4.75 million loan to Scanwood Canada. Like everything else that comes out of the Industrial Expansion Fund, this money was shrouded in secrecy. No business plan, no financial analysis to evaluate. But now we know the results. Today, 235 people are out of work, and the taxpayers of Nova Scotia are out $4 million. So my question to the Premier, where was the due diligence on this decision?
The time frame for QP, I forgot to mention, would start at 1:02 and end at 2:02. Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. There was considerable due diligence with respect to this matter, and I should point out, as he pointed out, there were 235 jobs at stake with that company. What we wanted to do with them is to work with them to modernize their equipment so that they would be in a position to be able to continue to supply, under their four-year contract with IKEA, the furniture that was the main product for that business. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, that didn't work out, and it's really the Royal Bank who called the security, as the member opposite would know. It is extraordinarily disappointing and difficult day for the families of those people who work at Scanwood.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we know that Scanwood has only been able to meet half of its contractual obligations to manufacture 900,000 drawers a year. This closure casts further doubt on the ability of Cabinet to make business decisions, especially ones made in secrecy, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, in the spirit of openness and transparency, will the Premier make available all the information that Cabinet used to make this loan?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the member opposite knows, of course, that materials that are supplied to Cabinet are done on a confidential basis. We looked at this from the very real perspective of the people who were working at that company. In some ways, I guess the difference would be whether or not they were out of business and therefore unable to continue to employ those people 2 years ago, or whether that happened now. Our hope, of course, and the investment was to modernize the equipment for exactly the purpose which the Leader of the Opposition points out, was to in order to allow them to be able to meet their commitments under that contract. The unfortunate truth is that for whatever reason they were not able to come up with additional financing that they needed in order to be able to satisfy the creditors that they had. My hope, Mr. Speaker, is that although this is now before the receiver, of course, my hope would be that someone would look at this as a viable operation and would pick it up as a going concern. Certainly that's my hope for the company, and that's my hope for the employees, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this loan was made 1 year ago, not 2 years ago. What we're asking for is the information that Cabinet had to make this loan, Mr. Speaker. In that year, Nova Scotians have been asked to pay an additional 2%. They've been asked to pay an increase in over 1,400 user fees. Mr. Speaker, we had last word last week that every tax bill in the province of Nova, residential tax bill in the province of Nova Scotia will be going up because this government is downloaded onto municipalities. And now Nova Scotians woke up this morning to find out that their Premier threw away $4 million, Mr. Speaker, when Nova Scotians have a right to know why he made that decision. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier table all of the information which led to a Cabinet decision costing taxpayers over $4 million? $4 million, Mr. Speaker, that they will not get back.
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as usual, almost everything he said in his preamble is wrong. We have had nothing to do with any downloading of the municipalities. That's simply a fabrication. Mr. Speaker, there is a receivership process that is currently underway. We have security on the equipment which we financed. We are in the security queue on the other assets of the company. We have personal guarantees on it, Mr. Speaker. The reality is that we took such security as we could get because, Mr. Speaker, ultimately maintaining and investing in good jobs for the people of Nova Scotia is not a mistake, Mr. Speaker. That is why we are here.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, here we go again. We've had woodlot owners come and talk to all MLAs about the way this government is mismanaging the forestry industry. We had Bill 100 employers this fall surround the House about the way this government is mismanaging labour-government relations. Now, Mr. Speaker, we are being inundated by calls and visits from independent pharmacists around the province who are concerned about the way the government is proceeding without working with them in making major change to their industry. And so my question to the Premier is this. When will you get on with the job of establishing a true and proper and fair tariff schedule for our independent pharmacists so they can get on with doing their job and providing an important service to Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't think the leader of the Conservative Party has really been following this development. The fact of the matter is that we have had very extensive consultation with the Pharmacy Association of Nova Scotia. We have had extensive discussion, meetings with them. They have been and fully involved, Mr. Speaker, with the fair drug pricing legislation so that they knew what was coming. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It appears it is the Premier who is not very involved in what's going on with his government because no reasonable person would think that 1.5 weeks of consultation of this nature on an industry of this importance would qualify as extensive consultation. That is a farce, Mr. Speaker, nor is it consultation to invite an NDP activist to come to your own press conference to speak for an entire industry. And so my question for the Premier is this. When will his government get on with the job of negotiating the expanded scope of services that they promised to pharmacists so they can get on with doing their job, which is providing an important service to the people of Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll table for the information of the honourable member the discussion paper on fair drug prices for Nova Scotia that was which was distributed, in September 2010. It was the basis for the discussions that took place among the Pharmacy Association, the government, and other interested parties, Mr. Speaker, because it wasn't just the pharmacists. There are a lot of people who are going to be affected by this.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I sure hope that discussion paper wasn't written by the same people who wrote the discussion paper that only consulted with a few people when we were dealing with labour issues in Bill 100. I sure hope that whoever they are finally get on with the job of dealing with the forest strategy that's been promised 3 times. My question to the Premier is this. Why won't you involve pharmacists themselves in actually dealing with the issue of pharmacy services as a complete and comprehensive package and end the piecemeal approach where you deal with their expenses today and promise something generally for the future?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What I will do is I will table for the Leader of the Conservative Party the Fair Drug Prices for Nova Scotia consultation summary, which includes a summary of all of the people who were consulted, including 16 groups, including the Pharmacy Association of Nova Scotia, 13 written submissions, and more than 50 emails that were received in relation to this matter. I think if he has an opportunity to look at it, he will see that it was a fair, Mr. Speaker, a fair representation of business and communities across the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Last week, the Honourable Member from King's West asked the Minister of Health and Wellness to table her response to Chief Mander's letter regarding the prescription drug problem in the Valley. The Minister indicated that a response had been sent on February 15, 2010. The Honourable Member from King's West asked for the letter to be tabled last Tuesday and again last Thursday, so my question to the Premier, will the Premier ensure that the Minister of Health and Wellness tables her response to addressing Chief Mander's concerns by the end of question period today?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I believe I was here, as was the member opposite. My recollection was that the Minister of Health went through a lengthy list of things that had been done with respect to the issue that Chief Mander had identified, including the monitoring program, Mr. Speaker. Recognize and take very seriously the issue that has been identified, and the Department of Health is doing everything they can to work with the district health authorities, with the police, and with the other community stakeholders to ensure that we find a solution or an approach to the problem.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Speaker, the question was, we were asking the Minister of Health to table a letter that she referred to last week that she'd sent to Chief Mander. The Premier went into government talking about openness and transparency. What's wrong with allowing the people of Nova Scotia and the people of this House to see that letter? The Minister committing to do it, let him do it. Mr. Speaker, when a respected member of the policing community takes time out of his busy schedule to express concerns to government, they deserve to be addressed. People are losing their lives, Mr. Speaker. Families and communities in the Annapolis Valley are looking for answers. This same letter was also addressed to the Minister of Justice. Surely a letter from the Chief of Police warrants a response from the Minister who is responsible for their organizations. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier ensure that the Minister of Justice tables his response to Chief Mander's letter before the end of question period today?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Health, of course, as is appropriate, responds on behalf of the government. She responded to the chief's letter of concern, Mr. Speaker. All of that was in the letter was already outlined for the Leader of the Opposition. Thank you.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Speaker, Chief Mander in his letter stated, and I quote, "If we turn away and fail to start working together, take up the challenge and have the difficult discussions we need to have, more Nova Scotians will die." He goes on to say, "This letter has been addressed to the Minister of Justice, Health and Social Services. For I believe these ministers need to show leadership, courage and conviction to create a venue whereby these challenges can be undertaken." End of quote. Mr. Speaker, we've asked twice in this House and these questions for the Premier to table a response from his government to Chief Mander about a serious issue where Nova Scotians are dying, not only in the Valley but across this province, from using of prescription drugs. I want the Premier to stand up and tell Nova Scotians why he is unwilling to release and table that letter in the House so that Nova Scotians know where his government stands on this serious problem.
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, where our government stands is in agreement with the chief. We agree that we need to work together. We need to work with the district health authority. We need to work with the policing officials, Mr. Speaker. As they know, the responses that go out to individuals, we haven't asked the permission of the chief of police to table it. You can perhaps ask him. My understanding is that that response was sent to him, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. The Minister's refusal to release the socioeconomic study on gambling is very troubling for Nova Scotians. It shows just how secretive this government truly is. Mr. Speaker, by hiding this report, the NDP is saying clearly that the Premier and his government simply do not trust Nova Scotians. The Minister should release this report and should do so today. My question to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education, will the Minister table this report in its entirety to the House today?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I've mentioned several times in this chamber, we have 30 days to respond to the recommendation, and we're taking our time and making sure that that we understand the consequences, and we want to protect the best interests of Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when it comes to gambling, the province has a duty of care obligation. The government has had well over a year to respond to and release this report, yet haven't. The NDP are failing Nova Scotians on many fronts, not the least of which is transparency and accountability. The review officer has stated that this government should release this report and that they should release it now. Mr. Speaker, since the minister is not willing to release this report, my first supplementary will go to the Premier. In the spirit of openness and transparency, will the Premier table this report in its entirety today to the House?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think the Honourable Member has already heard from the Minister who has received the report. She's reviewing it as would be appropriate in the circumstances to determine what the Department's response will be. And I'm sure that when she completes her review, she'll be happy to answer the Member's question more fully.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, not only has this government been withholding this report from the public, but they have been obstructing the work of the review officer. A quote from page 5 of the report of the FOIPOP review officer. There was over a month delay before Labour confirmed that it, in fact, was the department that retained custody and control of the record. It has come to light that during the same period of time that the final strategy with respect to gaming in the province was being prepared for the public release. End of quote. As nothing happens in the government without direction from the Premier's office, this looks to Nova Scotians like a deliberate effort to yet again evade public scrutiny. This calls into question the validity of the entire gambling strategy that this government released. My question to the Premier, why did the Premier's office obstruct the work of the review officer? Who was it in the Premier's office that made this decision?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I reject categorically the assertion that's being made by the member, and I think it's inappropriate.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, today I ask a question that speaks to the importance of integrity of government in Nova Scotia. The Freedom of Information Officer said there was considerable delay by this government in releasing the report on the socioeconomic impacts of gambling, because two departments in government were deciding who owned that report. My question is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Was the government purposely delaying the release of that report so that it would not damage the release of its new gaming strategy?
Honourable the Minister of Advanced Labour and Advanced Education. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The answer is simple and clear. No.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Freedom of Information Officer told us that the report should not be withheld, and this is the socioeconomic report on gambling, from the public, because it does not fall within the meaning of advice to the Minister. My question through you to the Minister is, if you will not release that report, what are you trying to hide?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I've made clear to the Chamber, there were serious concerns about the process and the information that was being researched, and we stopped the... it was overdue. We expected the advice within 12 months. There had been considerable back and forth under the previous government in terms of concerns about the methodology. There was no response from the researcher. It got to the point where we had to cancel the process. And it's not in a finished state. The information is not in a state that can be used. It was not used as the basis for the gaming strategy. And we are trying to be responsible and make sure that the information that we use to make decisions is accurate and relevant and valid. And That's why we're taking our time and making sure that we understand the implications of any further release of information. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, the government could release it, and if they have a problem with it, why not state it? My question finally is to the Premier. In opposition, this member called for open discussion on the negative impact on gambling on Nova Scotians and their families. Why not give Nova Scotians the confidence that their legislature has integrity and table that report here today?
Hear, hear. Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the explanation that was given by the minister was full and complete on the question that's asked by the member. But I would also, Mr. Speaker, like to add that we did complete the new gaming strategy. We have brought it forward. We think it's one that will benefit the people of Nova Scotia. This has been an issue that we as a province, and I think as a society, not just here, but generally, have been grappling with over the last number of years. And I would hope that the members opposite would be hoping and considering the fact that this is a strategy that is aimed to make our situation, the gaming report, as responsible as possible.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community Services. The Dartmouth Adult Services Centre, DASC, is a nonprofit workshop that provides programming opportunities for persons with disabilities. Scanwood contracts the ASC workers to package materials. The Scanwood contract brings in approximately $10,000 every year for this nonprofit to do its very important work. The ASC has said this contract is a significant loss to their budget, Mr. Speaker. With Scanwood in financial trouble, what is the minister planning to do to help the ASC replace this client?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Dartmouth Adult Service Centre is a wonderful centre that provides many opportunities for individuals with disabilities. And they also, in recent media reports with respect to the issues that were taking place with the Scamwood company, were able to include that in their budget, that they knew that this was going to be a possible issue for them. So everything is fine with their budget.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've spoken with parents across this province who are trying to access day programming for their disabled children. DASC's programming is in very high demand with a current waiting list of 51 people, Mr. Speaker. In addition to providing meaningful work opportunities for persons with disabilities, DASC offers specialized supports to some of our most vulnerable citizens. Without contracts from companies like Scanwood, DASC has less programming to offer workers and lower operating budget for specialized supports. Now DASC finds itself as a creditor in a bankruptcy. My question to the minister, will the minister ensure that no spaces are lost at DASC for persons with disabilities?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I can certainly tell the member, the fact is that this minister and this government has recently made some wonderful announcements with respect to our day programs, $500,000, not something that the former government even considered, and I think we deserve to be congratulated for that.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure the minister is aware that DASC's plan to expand its services and address its wait list. 51 individuals are waiting to access DASC's programming and find meaningful work. This expansion will benefit Nova Scotia and the Department of Community Services. What is the minister doing to ensure this financial hit does not negatively impact DASC's plans to address the wait list?
The Honourable Minister, Community Services.
Firstly, Mr. Speaker, I have a question because one of the members opposite are asking, telling us not to give money, and then on the other hand, another member is telling us to give money. So first to make sure the issues aren't confused. I think that the questions shouldn't be flip-flopping back and forth. But I want to say is the fact is that we have focused a great deal on persons with disabilities in this province and have made major inroads and are working together with organizations like DASC. And I know that they appreciate that. And we're monitoring and we are investing. We are investing in the people of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. Last week, I received a briefing from Department of Health and Wellness staff, which included issues surrounding negotiations of the tariff agreement with pharmacists and the province. One of the issues mentioned in the briefing was that there is a plan to mitigate the risk to rural pharmacies in areas of the province where there are unique geographic circumstances. The failure of the minister to mention publicly that this plan would be addressed in tariff negotiations speaks volumes, as it takes the focus of government's message away from saving money. And equally important, it admits that there's a real risk when it comes to the survival of rural pharmacies that government is failing to address publicly. My question to the minister is, if the minister knows that rural pharmacies are at risk, why don't we as yet have a tariff agreement negotiated that effectively addresses the risks?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as you know, this government is taking action to get better drug prices for Nova Scotians. And, Mr. Speaker, we also are doing it in a way that ensures that our pharmacare programs will be sustainable, and as well as our community pharmacies will be sustainable. That's why we undertook extensive consultations with the pharmacy industry, and listen to what they had to say with respect to their advice on our plan. Mr. Speaker, we are currently in tariff negotiations with the Pharmacy Association of Nova Scotia, and we will continue to have a very balanced and fair approach to negotiating with our pharmacies. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government has chosen to address each of these issues in isolation for reasons that are becoming clearer. Last week, departmental staff mentioned a plan to mitigate risk to rural pharmacies where there are unique geographical circumstances. So my question to the minister is, will the minister table the list of rural pharmacies at risk before the end of question period today?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have absolutely no intention of negotiating a tariff agreement here on the floor of the legislature.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, we're not asking for that to happen here today. We're asking for the communities that have been identified by the Department of Health staff that have been identified as being isolated or unique, that those communities know that they are being considered. And I don't think that that in any way impacts the overall negotiations, because what you're doing... Thank you. Mr. Speaker, if we don't know where they are, then every community believes that they are uniquely situated. Every community is feeling the stress and the uncertainty that surrounds this issue. So, Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask the minister, since she so clearly will not provide the list of pharmacies, will the minister please table the criteria that was used to develop that list of pharmacies, or pharmacies that are at risk? Thank
you. The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, it's a good thing that member is not at the table negotiating with the pharmacies, is all I can say, Mr. Speaker. If she wants that kind of information tabled in the middle of a negotiation, Mr. Speaker, I don't think it would be much of a negotiation.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, today we learned that Nova Scotia has the highest rate of inflation of any province in Canada. That means that more Nova Scotians are digging deeper into their pockets for the everyday necessities of life. Now, I know that the government does not control the rate of inflation, but they do control the level of taxes and fees that they pile on to Nova Scotians. That is within their control. And so my question to the Premier is this. Will you, in light of this new hardship faced by Nova Scotians, review your 1,400 fee increases that the current budget imposes, or will you turn your backs on the hardships that Nova Scotians face today?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the Leader of the Conservative Party for that question. He's quite right. The new figures did come out today. They also noted, Mr. Speaker, that what was driving the inflation numbers in Nova Scotia was home heating oil. Which, of course, Nova Scotia has almost 60% of our homes on home heating oil. When you exempted home heating oil, Mr. Speaker, we were below Ontario and, in fact, on par with the rest of the country.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm sure Nova Scotians will be greatly relieved by that answer. On top of the rate of inflation, of course, Mr. Speaker, we have the 2% more HST and, as I mentioned, 1,400 new fee increases as a result of this government. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are now facing difficult choices, like whether to fix their roof or fill their oil tank, among other choices. My question to the Premier is, when will you stop adding to the financial hardship of Nova Scotians, get on with the job of balancing the budget, and then give working Nova Scotians the break that they deserve?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. In fact, Mr. Speaker, one of the things that this government did was it took our portion of the HST off of one of the most important commodities to families at this time of year, which is the price of energy, Mr. Speaker. I hope that in his desire to help Nova Scotians, perhaps, Mr. Speaker, he would agree that the federal government should take the GST off of home heating oil.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Take it back.
Mr. Speaker, I certainly hope the federal government wouldn't follow the taxing policies of this government where they provide that break but then add 2% onto absolutely everything else. That is not a responsible way to deal with the hardships of Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. Raising taxes and fees is not good economic management. And so my final question to the Premier, given his two previous answers, it begs the question, why is your government already so out of touch with the reality of Nova Scotia today?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, in fact, this is a government that is in touch with the needs of the people of this province, Mr. Speaker. That's why we insisted on taking the HST off energy. That's why we put in place the affordability tax credit. That's why we put in place the poverty reduction tax credit, Mr. Speaker. That's why we've made the single largest investment in families, Mr. Speaker, who are low-income Nova Scotians in the last decade, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you to the Minister is to the Minister of Education. Over the weekend, it was reported by the Halifax Regional School Board that they will cut the Youth Pathways and Transition Program as a result of the Department of Education's budget cuts to that school board. The Youth Pathways Program supports the recommendations of the Nunn Report. It provides specialized school programming to help students at risk. The minister I know will try to pass the buck to the school boards, but Nova Scotians are not easily fooled. They know that the program loss is the direct result of $17.6 million being cut to public school programs. So my question to the minister is this. Is this what the NDP government means when they say cuts to education will not affect students?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question, even though I find it unfortunate on the way it was framed. We are in a situation now within our economy that we need to make sure that we rebalance and make sure our system is meeting the needs of our students, but we also make sure that we need to make sure that our students that we have in school today have a Nova Scotia
in the future that they are going to be proud of and that they can stay here and they can work. We need to make sure our economy is going to be good for them. Now, the decision that was made by the Halifax Regional School Board, I don't have any information on that, but I do know that the Halifax Regional School Board supports their students and will do the very best that they are going to do for their students. And I understand very clearly that they are able to meet the needs of the students. You know, Mr. Speaker, I find it very difficult to answer this question with the member opposite heckling, but I do know that the Halifax Regional School Board said that they are going to be making sure that the students' needs are met in their schools, and the program that was cut was in a very specific place, and that they're going to be providing resources in other areas. But I will also state that this is a decision made by the Halifax Regional School Board, and I don't have all the particulars.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I find it quite amusing to think that the needs will be met in the school, because these kids will not be in any school if they are not in this program. Mr. Speaker, the Youth Pathways and Transition Program helps those students who require a different learning environment other than that offered in typical classrooms. The program has had success reaching out to a high number of students. It has helped students with behavioral disorders, it has helped students from low socioeconomic backgrounds, and it has helped students who, for whatever reason, have become disengaged in the public classrooms. So, Mr. Speaker, just like Reading Recovery, Youth Pathways help students who need this help the most when they need it the most. Programs prevent students from falling through the cracks and provide opportunities. So my question to the minister...
Come on, Gary.
Her answer with the speech.
Order, order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Member for Colchester North has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is this. Will the minister explain why the NDP government insists on cutting programs that attempt to level the playing field and save our kids?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There are many programs available in the Halifax Regional School Board that are designed to meet the children, the needs of children that are not well served by schools for whatever reason. Also, there's other programs in the schools. We have options and opportunities. The Halifax Regional School Boards make these decisions with the best interest of students. Now, the one facility that has been cut is providing a very good service, but the Halifax Regional School Board has made their decision based on information and the capabilities within the capacity within the system to meet the needs of our students. There are many programs available. Mr. Speaker, as you know, that the Halifax Regional School Board also has Schools Plus and sites available around the Halifax Regional School Board to meet the needs not only of the students, but of the families. There are programs available for our youth, and if there are any specific questions available for that... And I can't answer for the Halifax Regional School Board, but that question could be directed. But I do know that the needs of their students are their top priority. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on your final supplementary.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That was a great list of programs, and I'm very much in favor of those programs, but that is not the program we're talking about. We're talking about students who have needs that cannot be met in the public classrooms. So, by refusing to take responsibility for the government's actions, the NDP government's cut to public schools has come at a time when we should be investing in our children's education in order to meet the labour market demands. And in order to do that, Mr. Speaker, they must be in school and they must graduate. So my question to the minister is this. Will you commit today to provide the Halifax Regional School Board the funds they need to continue that program on Youth Pathways?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. The Halifax Regional School Board has been provided their target budget, and I know that they're working within those parameters, and they're doing a very good job. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of the Environment. Mr. Speaker, the other day, Monday actually, the Premier announced his intention to legislate LED lighting for all highway lamps in Nova Scotia, and we said at the time we support that initiative, and I certainly hope the Premier has been advised since his press interview that there's no requirement for ratepayers to cover that improvement. But in any case, neither the Premier nor the Minister of the Environment on Monday addressed the issue of disposal of the existing high-pressure sodium mercury vapor and other lamps which will be removed from service. So, Mr. Speaker, would the Minister of the Environment advise this House how his government plans to address the disposal of a large number of existing street lamps?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, for the question opposite. And unlike the members opposite, we are dealing with this issue. We're dealing with our federal counterparts, and we're dealing with the stakeholders, and we're moving forward on this issue. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, his government's not dealing with anything. I can't even believe he would give that as an answer. His government, in opposition, these members committed to deal with the disposal of street lamps and mercury lamps, and they haven't done anything. Provinces such as Alberta and Ontario have already implemented programs to recycle light bulbs of this kind, and in Nova Scotia, they're simply tossed in the landfill. You know, the Harper government might be delaying the phase-out of incandescent bulbs, but I thought this government might be trying to do something with the LED plan, but it seems that it doesn't want to. So, Mr. Speaker, while in opposition, members of this government, including the Premier, made commitments that this issue would be a priority. It's now 21 months later, and there's still no regulations for governing recycling of light bulbs. So, Mr. Speaker, where are those regulations?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. To the member opposite, I can tell you that we are working with this. This is a very serious issue, and I want to assure the member opposite that we intend to try to keep these out of the landfill. We're working with our federal counterparts and stakeholders. I also want to talk about some things that we've accomplished over the last 21 months. We have been recognized by the Climate Change Conference in Copenhagen. We've been recognized by the David Zucchi Foundation. We have done more in 21 months, Mr. Speaker, than the previous opposition has done in decades. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, they've done more in 21 months to damage the environment than the Tory government did in all their years in government. You know, Mr. Speaker, we have Nova Scotia entrepreneurs here who are currently sending bulbs out of province, exporting economic potential and exporting jobs. This is another example of how the jobs here strategy is quickly becoming jobs somewhere else. Mr. Speaker, this is an opportunity which is good for business, good for the environment, good for Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, will the minister commit today to table in this House this week the government's plan for the recycling of street lamps that will be replaced by the LED fixtures?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, to the member opposite, we are working with our federal government. This is a very serious issue, and we want to address this issue of keeping them particular light bulbs out of landfills. And as I mentioned earlier about our being recognized in the last 21 months, the only thing that maybe we need to do is win the Stanley Cup to get recognition for environmental issues in this province. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, volunteer firefighters are our friends and neighbours, everyday heroes who risk their lives to keep their communities safe. Unfortunately, volunteer fire services across the province are finding it harder to recruit and retain the people they need. Mr. Speaker, the previous PC government, through the Nova Scotia Fire Marshal's Office and the Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia, struck a recruitment and retention committee to not only recruit volunteer firefighters, but also to retain the ones you have. The report was provided to the Minister of Labour in late 2009, early 2010. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister, what are your government's plans for this report?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The report is under review at various levels within the department. I'm also in the process of setting up a meeting to meet directly with officials from volunteer fire departments. Certainly, we've brought in the Office of Volunteerism and Nonprofit Sector into the Department of Labor and Advanced Education to better align and increase the opportunities for all voluntary sector organizations across this province to build their capacity. The issue that's been raised by the Honourable Member is one that's common to many community-based organizations and provincial groups, something we take very seriously. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, here we go again. This was a report that was provided to the department in 2009, early 2010. A year later, it's still under review. I'm sure it'll probably find a shelf somewhere with other reports that have been tabled, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia says there's a relatively high turnover rate for volunteer firefighters in this province, with volunteers remaining in departments for between 3 to 5 years, making it more and more difficult, especially for small departments and small rural communities. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister, is the Minister able to define today any recommendations the Fire Marshal's office or her government will be following to stay on top of this issue?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I recently had a meeting with officials from Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations on this issue. As I've said, this situation is not only specific to volunteer fire services across the province, but it also relates to many other sectors in the voluntary sector that actually provide the social infrastructure and protection of Nova Scotians. So it is much broader than is being suggested, and we need to make sure that we're not only putting in place recognition and supports for volunteer firefighters and their organizations, but we recognize the more general issues that impact the whole sector. And certainly as our population ages, this is going to become more and more a topic of interest and will require a responsible and shared action, both on the part of government, but also with the organizations and with communities and other levels of government. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, towns across Nova Scotia still have a significant turnover, but they remain the most stable areas for volunteer firefighters. The real problems exist in the more rural areas of Nova Scotia, where there are a number of homes and buildings, but people spend many hours away from their communities to work. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister. This is an issue we can't keep ignoring. What incentives is this government providing to existing firefighters and potential firefighters to ensure that our rural communities are safe?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Mr. Speaker, I can only add that the issues haven't changed with the change of government. And just as the former government took their time to thoroughly understand the impacts and the issues and to understand what practical supports they can put into place, our government is doing the same thing. This is going to be a continuous issue for a lot of organizations, and it's something that deserves a lot of thoughtful reaction and action. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, last week Dalhousie University announced tuition increases for professional programs. Law tuition will increase by 6% in September, medicine by 10%, and dentistry will increase by 14%. Can the Minister of Advanced Education and Labour please explain why she did not place a cap on professional fees?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, the government is attempting to protect students from any unreasonable increases. A letter just went out, it may actually have been early this week or late last week, from the Deputy Minister clarifying the notice and the rationale that universities are expected to provide to the department before they announce any increases. As I understand it, these have not been formalized by the Board of Governors, and certainly I'm sure that the rationale will be forthcoming to me and the rest of the department. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request that the Minister table that letter. Mr. Speaker, many students in professional programs already have thousands of dollars in debt from an undergraduate degree, and they aren't eligible for a debt cap on their second degree. I wonder if the minister has checked any job ads lately, because today's labor market often requires a second degree just to get an interview. My question to the minister, why won't the minister cap student debt on a second degree?
The Honourable Minister of Labor and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, in this time of government trying to live within its means, I think we have made considerable progress in capping the debt on the first degree. And certainly, those may be areas that we can look at in the future. But we want to make sure that that post-secondary education is as affordable as possible. That's why we've invested the $30 million in the bursary. That's why we have capped tuition increases. And that's why we have improved the student assistance package. We understand and value the importance of a university education. And we want to encourage as many Nova Scotians as possible to get their first and second degrees. But I think the citizens of this province have made it quite clear to us that there's a certain range within which they can afford to subsidize post-secondary. So we're trying to take a fair and balanced perspective on this. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, professional programs are fiercely competitive and they require years of specialized training. These students are often forced to leave the province to find work after they get their degree so they can pay down their debt. The minister indicated she's prepared to look at this issue in the future. My question is to the minister, will she place a fully funded cap on professional programs in the next round of the MOU negotiations?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly the government appreciates the suggestion. There will be many, many issues on the table during the Memorandum of Understanding negotiations with the university sector. And, I'm not going to give a list here in the chamber. We'll see what the outcome of those deliberations are, and I'm sure they will be of benefit to Nova Scotian students and certainly our excellent university system. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. Last Friday in Estimates, I asked the Minister of Health and Wellness to clarify some issues around funding for the tobacco control strategy. During our dialogue, the Minister questioned some of the facts I presented in the House, facts that were generated not by myself, but by a very well-respected coalition in our province, Smoke-Free Nova Scotia. The Minister went on to claim that we have the second highest per capita spending on tobacco control in our country, and that she has sent a letter to Smoke-Free Nova Scotia correcting them on the information they provided to members of the House. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister is, will the Minister table the letter sent to Smoke-Free Nova Scotia, correcting them on the information that they compiled before the end of question period today?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, it is the case that Nova Scotia spends the most per capita on tobacco control, second only to the province of Quebec, Mr. Speaker. And I think this is something that we should feel very good about, Mr. Speaker, in terms of our approach. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, I provided that information to the honourable member in estimates, and I indicated to her that we had corrected, we had communicated with Smoke-Free Nova Scotia the error in the information that they were using, which was a bit, I don't think it was outdated, but it failed to take into account the efforts of law enforcement with respect to the amount of expenditure around tobacco control. At no time did I indicate there was a letter, Mr. Speaker, nor did I read from a letter.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the minister had told me that they were very happy to hear that their figures were wrong, but when I contacted them, they have not been told that their figures were wrong, or at least they don't all know that, so I thought there should be something in writing that would confirm that. Mr. Speaker, my question is really that the organization, or the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit organization, prepared the figures that I used and that Smoke Nova Scotia, or Smoke Free Nova Scotia used. I'd be happy to table those figures, and they show that Nova Scotia is at $2.56 on a per capita spending, and that the national average is $3.54. Yeah. As I said to the minister, those figures are compiled in 2010, so they're not out of date, and they're based on information that is provided by our own provincial government to Ontario. So my question for the minister is, why did the minister question the data produced by the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit and used by Smoke Free Nova Scotia when it was her own government that provided the information in the first place?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my understanding is that the Ontario data includes law enforcement with respect to illegal tobacco. And we have a very strong program with respect to law enforcement around illegal tobacco. And the information that was provided in the compilation of that data failed to provide that aspect of our initiative. And so the data the member is referring to does not accurately reflect the expenditures in this province, in their totality, with respect to tobacco control. And I corrected that during the estimates. My understanding is that my staff have communicated this to Smoke Nova Scotia and whoever, or Smoke Free Nova Scotia, and whoever they spoke with was very pleased to learn that this is the case, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, in my final supplementary, I would like to ask the minister to look again at the figures she has and to provide them to the House, to provide them to all of us here today, because it really is very difficult and it's certainly not transparent to have different things included in what you're quoting when you try to boast that we're the second highest in the country. And if other provinces are including law enforcement, that's fine. We need to know what figure is being used by Nova Scotia. And our law enforcement's law enforcement officers that are looking at tobacco control also look at alcohol and gaming. So I want to make sure that the figure that's used is actually legitimate, and it's the figure that relates purely to the tobacco control efforts of those individuals. So would the minister provide a breakdown of the costs that she's using to determine our per capita spending on tobacco control? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, estimates, with all due respect, have finished. I think the important point, Mr. Speaker, is that this government will be bringing forward a renewed tobacco strategy very shortly, Mr. Speaker, and it will tackle the ongoing problem of tobacco use in our province, and I'm looking forward to the support of all members of this House in making that renewed tobacco strategy an effective one for the health and well-being of people in this province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, this year's budget announced several changes to the Nova Scotia Student Assistance Program. But there's one issue that was not adequately addressed that has student groups very concerned. That issue was called unmet needs. Unmet needs is the difference between a student's assessed financial need and the funding provided by government financial assistance. Mr. Speaker, according to the Alliance of Nova Scotia Student Association, there are 2,275 students with unmet need currently attending universities or college in Nova Scotia. Students believe that the increase of $340 to the level of maximum assistance will force many students to make some difficult decisions. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Advanced Education, if this government is committed to targeting assistance to those who need it most, how does the minister plan to address the unmet need gap facing students next year?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Well, Mr. Speaker, certainly one of the main...
Order, please. The time for oral questions put by members to minister has elapsed.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.